On the airplane yesterday, I upgraded to first class, so I had several drinks, and I decided I could draw a picture of our speaker. and a mandatory story to embarrass him. So actually, it's hard to think of embarrassing stories about Jerry, since he's such a straight shooter. And when he does tell embarrassing stories, he does it better than anybody else about himself. But there was one year where everywhere I went, Jerry was already there. And that year happened to be the year also they had a special year in Lee Groups at the Schrodinger Institute that, in fact, Bert was one of the organizers for. And we were roommates, in office mates. And in that office, there were two connections for the internet. One was fast, which was 100 at that time, and one was slow. So my computer was good for the slow, and he had a fast computer. But unfortunately, the walls in that place didn't go to the ceiling, right? And so if somebody was loud next door, you could hear everything. And of course, there was a really loud physicist, okay? So we asked to get moved. So they moved us to another office eventually when it emptied. And it turned out it emptied because the physicist left. Right? But that office only had two slow connections, and that wasn't good enough for Jerry. So then we had to go back. Right? That's the best I can do for a story. Okay, so our quasi-symmetric functions are gotten in the following way. We look at the polynomials over a field of characteristic zero in n variables, and we define an action of the symmetric group that's linear, but not doesn't respect the algebra structure. Okay, and this is an example of a local action of E there. So notice that if ij and ij plus 1 are bigger than or equal to r, you don't do anything. And if they aren't, if one of the two is less than r, then you interchange them. And that's the action for si. And right, and then you extend it linearly. R is a non-negative integer, so it's for so it's R quasi-symmetric functions undefined. That's the R. Okay, and so the braid relations are satisfied, and they're obviously in a situation where SI squared is the identity. So we have a representation of the symmetric group on the polynomials for each R. But it's clearly not multiplicative, except under certain conditions when the action is so if R is infinity, then it's just the action of the usual action of the symmetric group, and if R is zero, then there's nothing happening at all. Okay, and okay, so RQSIM are the invariants. So since this is about symmetries. Here is the symmetry. And you can show that this is an algebra, and it clearly contains sim, which is the invariance under the symmetric group under the usual action. Okay, and so this was introduced by Florent Hivert as a generalization of QSIM, which is something that was invented by Jerry's colleague, Gessel. Okay, so Hivert's conjecture is that for R equals 0, 1, 2, etc., RQSIM is free as a SIM module under multiplication, with n factorial generators. Okay, and this work, by the way, is joint work with Adriano Garcia, who has been working on n factorial conjectures of every sort. So every time he sees a conjecture with n factorial in, he's in my office. And it turns out he's just found a new one, which is also due to Iver. It's not this one. So we'll probably, you know, for your 70th birthday, I'll talk about that one. Okay, so if R equals 0, 0 qsim is just the polynomials, and this is well known. If R equals 1, then 1 qsim is what is usually called qsim, and it's originally defined by Jessel, and the conjecture is a theorem of Garcia and me. I've decided at my age, I don't have to say W anymore. I can just say myself. Okay, so as a conjecture, it's a theorem of Garcia and me. And here, the reason they're called qsim is that, in fact, it's spanned by these monomials that look like this, which look like symmetric functions, except the A's in the exponents don't have to all be equal. Okay, and so the point of this lecture is to give a sketch of the proof of the Iver conjecture for all r bigger than 0. For r equals 0, we're basically going to use the fact that is proved there are at least 1,000 proofs of the case r equals 0. So I won't attribute it to anybody, or I could attribute it to everybody. Euler. I could attribute it to Euler. But I'm going to mention Euler where something he actually did later. Okay, and actually, obviously, I'm not going to give any details, but the point is the proof, in some sense, is more interesting than the theorem. Okay, at least to me, not to my coworker. Okay, so a sufficient condition for Cohen-Macaulay is something relatively simple, at least in the graded case. There's a simple condition that basically says you have a graded by degree finitely generated subalgebra of the polynomials, and you have a system of parameters for this algebra. So this is an n-dimensional subalgebra of f of x1, xn. And the UI are homogeneous of degree DI. And there's an element in the polynomial ring generated by the U1 up to UN that has the property that it pushes all polynomials into this ring. Then, and you also assume that the dimension of R over the ideal generated by those elements is less than or equal to the product of the degrees. Then the conclusion is that R is free on that many generators. So in particular, it's Cohen-Macaulay. Okay, so this is the result, and there are several ways of proving it. It's not a terribly hard theorem. But this is going to be the one of the two tools in the argument. And I should say that the place where we initially use this condition, we had it in a much more complicated form before, was when we gave a new proof of the Ettendorf-Ginzburg theorem, that the same result, if you look at M quasi-invariant polynomials, then they're free over the invariant polynomials on n factorial generators, and the key to the proof was, again, the same result. So it's, in some sense, it's surprising. All we have to do is show that a certain dimension is less than or equal to another dimension. Okay, so if R is equal to R qsim, then we can take the UI to be, say, the elementary symmetric polynomials, and then D1 up to Dn is n factorial. Right, and we can take the pi to be en to the r, which pushes all exponents above r, and so the action is So every polynomial is in there. So the only thing we have to prove is that quotient is less than or equal to n factorial. So that's the... and we'll also prove that the implication that inequality implies equality gives a new proof of the theorem of De Acanis, which actually, et al., which in turn sharpens the result of mine. And this result, I should say, it's something I'm particularly proud of because it's a result about the symmetric group that when I first told Springer and McDonald about it, they thought it was false. So in fact the proof of this theorem just pops out of the organization of the proof of Hebert's conjecture. Okay, so there's a special element of the group algebra, the symmetric group, and that involves using the cycles, right? K goes to K plus 1, right? Et cetera, coming back to K. We heard about cycles today earlier. And we just take this element of the group algebra, the symmetric group, and actually that C should be an F, but obviously, what difference does it make? Okay, so that's the element. And what we're going to observe is that the spectral decomposition for this element as acting on C of Sn is related to n factorial in a very beautiful way, to this n factorial business in a beautiful way. So if k is less than n, then we can write tau n in this way, right? Don't worry about all the details. So and then we do this. I'm pointing out a very fast result. And then we look at this. The second term is really tau n minus k in a different alphabet. And I think that's supposed to be a zeta, which is amazing. I mean, this is what the program Beamer does to zeta. Okay, so we take this, which is just the sum of all the elements of SV, and now we look at the vector space of all things that are killed by it on the right, and then you get this strange formula with the strange zeta. The critical thing on the right is nk, and on the left we have something from V. And the implication of that, I'm going through it fast, so don't even try to read it. If you're interested, I can, and it'll be on the internet, so you can look at it as much as you want. But I'll probably delete the picture I drew of... Okay, so the upshot is that you have this inequality that x times tau n on the right is n minus kx. So that eigenspace for the right action of tau n is at least as big as the binomial coefficient. Why am I pointing without this? Times the things that are killed by this. And this says that this sum of these things is less than or equal to this, which has to be less than or equal to n factorial. So, right, and it turns out amazingly, this set of inequalities implies the other theorem, but with a certain amount of work. So that's what we prove, that if this dimension is less than or equal to that, then we've proved Hebert's conjecture. So now we have a plan. Right? And this reminds me of a cartoon that Shel Silverstein did in Playboy when I was a kid. I actually looked at Playboy, but now I would be embarrassed to look at it. So it shows two guys in chains on a wall, You know, so they're chained, their legs are chained, everything's chained. Two of them, and they have these long beards. They've been there for a long time. And one looks over at the other one and says, I've got a plan. Okay, so here's our plan. Okay, so this involves derangements. And so it's a derangement is a permutation without any fixed points. And Euler gave a formula for the derangements, which is that the number of derangement is the closest integer to n factorial over e. Right, this is the second time Euler has come up in this meeting. It's going to come up, I guarantee you, in the next lecture, and he's going to try to get you to contribute some money to the Euler thing that is going to be going on in Switzerland. I'm kidding. He'll try to get you to go to spend some time during the Euler year. with a hat, yeah. Okay, and Mobius inversion from this formula, since this, so if we have proved equality in the theorem, so according to our plan, we if the conjecture is true and that estimate is true, then in fact we have equality here, we can apply Mobius inversion and find that the dimension of the zero eigenspace for tau n is exactly this, which is exactly dn, according to Euler's formula. Right? So this is the closest integer to n factorial over e. You know, so already there's something very interesting about this, that it says that the probability of, so for big N, the probability of picking a derangement randomly from the symmetric group is 1 over E, right? And E also has something to do with Euler. Okay, and this is a version of the theorem of Diaconis et al., because notice what it says is that all the eigenvalues of the form N minus K, that's my theorem, and in fact there's a bit more to my theorem, And the next slide will explain a little bit more. I guess it doesn't. Oh yeah, there it is. So this is a version. So if we observe that from derangements, you can get to any permutation, you can get the number of permutations with exactly k eigenvalues, then it turns out that the kth eigenvalue, eigenspace for this tau n is exactly the number of permutations with k fixed points. So my formula, for the characteristic polynomial of this element, so that my result was the characteristic polynomial was x minus n times the product of x minus j for j less than or equal n minus 2, right? And we had no clue as to why n minus 1 wasn't there, but it's a fact that if you have a permutation, it can't have exactly n minus 1 fixed points, right? And so that explains the result. And also you see that the element is semi-simple because the characteristic polynomial has no powers in it. Okay, so now we get to the quasi-monomials. So I'll call something like this. So this is essentially the kind of thing I defined before as coming from quasi-symmetric, but I don't put any condition a priori on the i's, and if ij are all bigger than or equal r, we'll call it an r monomial. And so in the case where the ij are all bigger than or equal 1, the 1 monomials form a basis of the quasi of qsim. But if R is bigger than 1, then that's not true. These are just a subset of a spanning set. But they do span RQSIM as a SIM module. Okay, and that. That's the whole point now. That's where we. It'll be on the last slide. Sorry. You see, the plan was that was what I gave, and then I related to the derangements, and now I have to go back somewhere along the line. I have to relate it back to derangements. Okay. But it's a very apt question. And it took us a long time to see what the relationship was. I should also say that Hivert invented RQSIM because he couldn't understand our proof of the result for QSIM without the R, so one QSIM. And in that paper, there was also a critical role of this tau n, and the paper had two proofs of the theorem because neither of us could understand the other guy's proof. Okay, so, or I should put it this way, that neither of us wanted to read the other guy's proof. But if you ever worked with Adriano, you'd know why. Okay, so his proof was 50 pages long, and my proof was 6 pages long. Okay, so, but in any event, right, the exactly why it worked was still somewhat mysterious, and so Hivert, it turned out, his thesis problem was to prove that QSIM was free over SIM, and when he told Adriano he couldn't do it, then we started working on it because it was an n factorial conjecture. Okay, so. Right, there's a zoo of choices of generators for SIM. We can look at the homogeneous symmetric functions, and they usually have an E, but we've already used E a lot, so I just left it off. Right. And right, then there are the power symmetric functions. And then there are the elementary symmetric functions. And they, right, and all three play a very important role in this talk. Okay, now, so now that I defined an operator, right, that basically sends a polynomial in K variable to an R quasi-symmetric polynomial, and the monomials that occur in this polynomial are exactly R quasi-monomials. Right, so because of that, this space spans RQSIM as a SIM module. And notice now I have a subscript N. Okay, and INR is the ideal generated by the invariant polynomials that vanish at zero. And what you can prove is that this operator sends this class of elements in the ideal for k variables into the ideal for n variables. Okay, and as a SIMK module, this quotient is just n over k copies of the regular representation of SK. Okay, and it's easy enough to check that with Hilbert series, whatever you want. Okay, so this already we have n over k, and we have SK. So we're getting things that are related to symmetric groups and smaller numbers of variables. Right. It's seeing. So I think I'm going too fast through this. So does anybody understand what I'm saying at this point? So I think I've been flying through the slides. So I'm going to talk a little slower because this is the second last slide. But actually, in the last slide, I'm going to have to say some extra words. Okay, so we have another operation that, notice what it does, is it inserts an X to the J in one. It starts with a monomial, right, that has powers A1 up to AK, and then it inserts an X1 to the J in the first position, or then an X2 to the J in the second position, etc. Right? And what this has to do with is multiplying by the power symmetric functions, right? So the one term, when I multiply a power symmetric function times a monomial and I do appropriate shifting, then I'll get at least a term like this, and it turns out this is the main term in what we were doing. Okay, now we take a complementary space to this space here, and this part here, right, this, notice that this, remember the quotient by this stuff is just n over k times the regular representation for sk. Okay, and then you can show that that in F, in this polynomial ring, that if we take the scalars plus these guys for k at least 2, then it spans RQ sim as a sim module. Okay, so right, so the question is what is this? Okay, but before we do that, this is the answer to Bert's question, that this guy here is exactly the image of tau k of this in the polynomials in k. So it has to do with, right, and so when we divide, so from this we see that if we divide, right, if we take the sums of the dimensions of these zk, we're basically calculating the kernel of tau k, right, on n over k copies of the regular representation. So hopefully that's what this next one says. No. Okay, so this implies that zk, the dimension of zk, is exactly equal to n over k times this dimension, which is Bert's question. Okay. But what this says is the following. So if we go back to, let's see if this is going to work. So the strategy, so we go back to the strategy, right, then this occurred in the strategy, right? So we have a generating set where each term, right, has dimension exactly equal to this, right? And that's less than or equal to this, which is our n factorial. But what does that say? It says that those zk are, that this is not an inequality. It's an equality because this is what the quotient is like, right? So if we prove this, that was our strategy, we're done, right? Which means, right? We did it. And so let me go back. Right? And that was the goal. So, and that's my talk, and I'm sorry I went so fast.
Okay.
What? Okay, so now would you like me to start again? Yeah.
The arrangement satisfies the following equation. You take dn, it's n times dn minus 1 plus or minus 1.
Right.
Can you see that from
me? Yeah. Yeah. So actually you can get, so you can derive that from Euler's recursion, and Euler's recursion is built into this too.
Because this ratio is, I just talked to my daughter, and I was getting this problem, probability. She has a deck of cards, I have a deck of cards. We turn over one at a time. What's the probability that at some point we'll have the exact same card?
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, 1 minus E over E.
Mm-hmm.
And so it comes back to your I don't understand the connection with your house of K.
Right. So I didn't give all the details. But the it's also, I should say that, so the, so actually I have something, another toy to show off, so I might as well do that. And it might. Well, I can read this. So let's see here. Yeah, there it is. So remember the minimal polynomial for this element I described as being x minus n times the product j equals 0 to n minus 2 x minus j. Okay, so this result, when the last time I visited MIT, this came up in two lectures that I gave, because at that time I was lecturing on QSIM is free over sim. And I was also lecturing on Whitaker integrals, where this, where the fact that that element has this characteristic polynomial was critical. And so there are two things that I want to say about this now is, one, as I said, we didn't understand why n minus 1 wasn't in here. Although, if you take that element, tau n, and look at it as a sum of permutation matrices on n variables, this is the characteristic polynomial of that element. So it turns out the characteristic polynomial on the usual representation is exactly the minimal polynomial in this representation, which is already interesting. So Adriano was all excited about this, as only Adriano can be excited. And he called up Diaconis, and he said, do you have any clue as to why there isn't any n minus 1 in there? And Diaconis says, it's completely obvious that there are no permutations that fix exactly n minus 1 elements. And so I get this call from Adriano, and he says, this is what Diaconis told me. I have no clue what he's talking about. Okay? And it wasn't until we finished our paper that we actually understood, because, in fact, Diaconis and his co-workers had given a proof of this theorem on the dimensions of the eigenspaces. The proof, by the way, is one paragraph long and uses probability theory. That and Diaconis was very relieved when we included a proof of his theorem in our paper. The other thing was that in the audience in MIT was Lustig, and he liked this a lot. Okay, so Lustig decided there must be a Q analog of it. So instead of working with the group algebra of SN, you work with the Hecke algebra. And it turns out there is, and it looks like this. So you just replace the Q analog, and you write down essentially the same element, and that's Lustig's theorem. And the multiplicities are, of course, the same, but deformation. So that's, I think that's all I have to say about that.
N factorial, of course, has the gamma function as an analytic extension. Do you think D sub n has an analytic extension beyond the end?
Well, you certainly could write it. You'd take the corresponding gamma function and divide by E. Yeah, no, but you're talking about the integer part. Yeah, no, I have no idea. It's one, two, not all cycles, and plus 2n plus n minus 1n plus n. That's the element. And we, to this day, we can't find an analog for other vowel groups, by the way. So this, you know, you might say, well, what you're doing is taking, if you take the diagram, you're taking Coxer elements as you move along the diagram, which makes sense for AN, but for the other Coxer groups, you have choices to make. And it's so there are, you can prove some things about specific choices. The semi-simplicity you can prove, but the calculating the eigenvalue seems to be hard. And there's no application that I know of for them. Right, with the Q equals 1. And you can imagine what it would be in the Hecke algebra, right? And then it would be that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you do it exactly as the.
Is there an analog to that? To the DN?
Yeah, that's.
In terms of the trace of the adjoint of the reflection representation, is it statement about the trace of the reflection representation being something?
Yeah, I have no idea. So we, you know, we've been stymied. I've been stymied. I mean, for Adriano, there isn't anything but the symmetric group. But the so for years I've been looking. You know, I've been looking at this off and on to find, you know, some reasonable thing. I should say also that after Lustig put his paper on the web, I saw him at the Borel Memorial meeting in Princeton, and so we were sitting across from each other at lunch, and he says to me, "Do you have any application of the Q analog?" And I said, "No." But I should say that the proof of the Q analog, in fact, is just parroting our proof of the De Connors, et cetera, result that's in our QSIM paper. But doing a lot of Lustig type calculations. I mean, there's one calculation that's at least 4 pages long. It's absolute agony. But that's the way it goes.
Okay. So no further questions. Thank you for your game.
Yeah, it's the probability of not being a
Thank you.